From the City of Angels off the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be, across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM. Yes, back in Los Angeles. Open lines later this hour. And a little later on, I'll tell you about my trip to Portland and Joshua Tree, Richard C. Hoagland's conference. Both of them went extremely well. Next hour, Doug Elwell, our guest. Mysterious World. We'll also talk with him about giants, Halloween, and some other creatures that might be roaming this planet. It's going to be an interesting, fun coast-to-coast program. Here's some of the news of the day. While I was at Joshua Tree, we were told that North Korea had detonated an atomic bomb, an explosion, underground test. The U.S. responded to North Korea's claim of a successful first test of a nuclear weapon by calling on the United Nations Security Council to enact wide-ranging sanctions, including a trade ban on military and luxury items, the power to inspect all cargo entering or leaving the country, and freezing assets connected with its weapons programs. The strongly worded request came as U.S. Ambassador John Bolton told the Security Council that Washington would view any North Korean aggression against South Korea or Japan as an attack on the United States. The United States has defense agreements with Tokyo and Seoul, and thousands of U.S. troops are stationed in both countries. Yet there are some people who do not believe that North Korea indeed detonated a nuclear bomb, that they didn't do it, the test never occurred, that perhaps they had some kind of tonnage of some other kind of an explosion. Matt Drudge reports on DrudgeReport.com that Bill Gertz of the Washington Times says U.S. intelligence agencies say, based on preliminary indications, that North Korea did not produce its first nuclear blast yesterday. And then again, this is according to Bill Gertz from the Washington Times. He goes on to write that U.S. officials say that seismic readings show that the conventional high explosives used to create a chain reaction in a plutonium-based device went off, but that the blast's readings were shy of a typical nuclear detonation. The underground explosion, which North Korea dubbed as a historic nuclear test, is thought to have been the equivalent of several hundred tons of TNT. Now, this is far short of the several thousand tons of TNT, or kilotons, that are signs of a nuclear blast, according to the official. Bill Gertz writes about this in Tuesday's Washington Times edition. Very interesting story. So who really knows yet? Meanwhile, Israel has apparently placed some of its forces in the Golan Heights bordering Syria on heightened alert for possible confrontations following a series of statements by the Syrian president Bashar Assad that his military is preparing for war with Israel. Would not be a smart thing on Syria's position. Military officials say the Israeli Defense Forces has fortified the positions in the Golan, including increasing security at checkpoints and the stationing of larger troop numbers at key areas throughout the territory. Military scientists in Britain are developing robot flies that could be sent to spy out enemy positions. The project leader believes the first machine insects could fly within 10 years. He has already produced a non-airborne prototype that mimics the wing beats of a hoverfly. The project leader says the tiny drones could operate in confined and cluttered spaces within buildings, stairwells, tunnels, or caves. They could help locate hidden terrorists or find victims of natural disasters such as earthquakes. That's remarkable. In Joplin, Missouri, a 13-year-old student wearing a dark green trench coat and carrying an assault rifle fired one shot in a middle school and then told two administrators, "Please don't make me do this." No one was injured. The student taken into custody. A woman used her four-week-old baby, listen to this, as a weapon in a domestic dispute, swinging the infant through the air, striking her boyfriend with the child. She used the kid as if it were a club. The boy in serious but stable condition at a hospital in Pittsburgh, according to the district attorney, he said, never remember anything like this. That's his quote. The woman is 27 years old, charged with aggravated assault. The infant suffered a fractured skull and some bleeding on the brain as it was being used as a club. Bulgarian archaeologists claim to unearth evidence that brain surgery was carried out more than 4,000 years ago. Georgi Nevatov, heading a team digging near the city of Svelengrad, said a skull belonging to a man who lived then had been found with a hole in it that had been carved out with surgical precision. Astronomers in the United Kingdom are going to join the search now, too, for Earth-threatening asteroids measuring less than 0.6 miles across. Researchers from three universities have signed an agreement to use one of the world's most advanced telescopes, the Pan-STARRS Observatory in Hawaii, to look for the objects. Although sub-0.6 miles asteroids might not cause devastation on a global scale, they could cause death and destruction at a local and regional level, potentially wiping out millions of lives. The last significant event like this occurred in 1908 when an asteroid or comet, we believe, exploded above the Tunguska region of Siberia. The area was sparsely populated and, as a result, did not cause extensive loss of life. A model of the Starship Enterprise used in the Star Trek television series has sold for $574,000, 20 times the estimate. The 78-inch model, which made its television debut in 1987 and was also used in the pilot and title sequences of Star Trek The Next Generation, was auctioned as part of a collection of sets and props. On the coasttocoastam.com website, under Hot Stories, take a look at the world's 15th largest diamond, fetching $12 million. Ladies, this thing is 603 carats, in case you're interested. And Google is snapping up YouTube for $1.65 billion in a deal that catapults the internet search leader to a starring role now in the online video revolution. It's an all-stock deal. What's so incredible about this? $1.65 billion, YouTube is still an unprofitable startup. By far, the most expensive purchase made by Google during its eight-year history. Isn't that something? Well, in a moment, we're going to be talking to intuitive psychic Sean David Morton about the situation in North Korea. First of all, Ed Dames, remote viewer, said earlier this year that North Korea will first test a nuclear weapon and then use one. That was Ed's remote viewing thoughts. Sean David Morton said on our program in August that we will see some saber rattling from North Korea. Indeed, we are. So in a moment, Sean David Morton on Coast to Coast AM. Well, intuitive psychic Sean David Morton. I was with Sean this weekend at Richard C. Hoagland's Joshua Tree Conference, Joshua Tree, California. Sean, always a pleasure to meet you and see your wife, Melissa. She is a wonderful person.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much. We always love seeing you, George. It's always a great pleasure to see you and Tom having fun. And again, I got to give you some props. I didn't give you a chance to say it at the end with the crowd there, but the fact that you're taking the time to go out to conferences like this and learn as much as you're learning, and sit through Richard, who was giving a talk on 2012, which I thought was going to last until 2012, actually. And I'm sorry, I stole your joke.
No, it's okay.
But it was fantastic and it was really fascinating, and it's just great to see you putting in the time and the study and just all it is you're doing to really keep informed and stay abreast of what's going on and really get involved in what's happening. And it's great to listen to Richard talk. He's a genius. He's a really original thinker, a great mind, a person who makes fantastic connections. And I had a great time. Did you and Tom have a chance to get out to the Integratron when you were there?
No, we did not. It was a quick trip for us because we came back. And I'm going to talk about that in a moment, about my trip to Portland. And it was really a fast trip, but I'm glad I was out there. Sean, the situation with North Korea. First of all, Bill Gertz is going to report in Tuesday morning's edition of the Washington Times that some officials aren't so sure now that North Korea indeed detonated some kind of nuclear blast.
I was out there with you, and actually, to tell you the truth, I'm just getting home now, so I haven't done really any research on it. I haven't done whatever. I mean, that's...
I want you to use your psychic intuitive mind for a moment.
Well,
what do you think?
Well, here's... I've been talking about... You know, Kim Jong-il is like... I mean, outside of being a fan of the movie Team America, he's really if he wasn't so dangerous, he would just be ridiculous. I mean, the background in Kim Jong-il is very, can we talk a little bit about his background
sure.
first, to where we're building up
sure.
to this? I mean, he was born February 8th of 1942. He became the divine leader of North Korea since the death in 94 of his father, Kim Il-sung, which obviously everybody knows. He'd actually ruled the country since 1948. He was born, actually, I don't know if you know this, but he's Russian, because he was born in Watsukoye in Siberia, actually, in the USSR. And in 73, he was elected secretary in charge of organization and propaganda for the Korean Workers' Party and was given a high-ranking Politburo position at that time. In 91, he was named supreme commander of the Korean People's Army. He was appointed to the rank of marshal. Of course, his father was grand marshal, and this was back in 1992. And then Kim Il-sung, his father, officially designated his son as his successor to the presidency, which is actually unique because it affected for the first time an actual hereditary transfer of power within a communist state. And, of course, part of the communist revolution had to do with overthrowing these kind of, you know, monarchical passages of power to father to, from father to son. Kim Il-sung died unexpectedly, actually, on July 8th of 1994. There wasn't an immediate public inauguration of Kim as president of North Korea. And in October of 97, Kim was named general secretary of the KWP, the Workers' Party. And then in September of 98, he was reappointed chairman of the National Defense Committee. So he was not made president right away, which was, but at that time, was North Korea's highest post. He speaks no other languages. He's met only a handful of Westerners. I think Madeleine Albright was one of the few Westerners that he's actually ever met.
Loves to party, I hear.
Loves to party. He was. He is reported to have the largest collection of pornography in the world.
Unbelievable.
His birthplace and background were changed officially as he was readied for deification, like his dad. Just to give you an idea of what goes on behind the scenes there, his government maintains over 100 pleasure villas for the use of government officials. Specifically designated pleasure teams are chosen from senior class high school girls, and I hear they're actually trained by Tom Danheiser in person, actually. They're kidnapped from Hong Kong and Macau. The girls are divided up into dance, song, and sexual satisfaction categories. And not only are they possibly in possession of nuclear weapons, of course, that's the debate now. The biggest thing that people are going to have to worry about now is that he has missile delivery systems, and that the North Koreans are building this immense arsenal of biological weapons because they're focusing on missile-delivered,
right.
high-atmospheric vapor
bombs.
See,
I think he can reach Los Angeles, and I think he can reach Hawaii.
That's the idea, because with the vapor bombs, they can deliver smallpox, anthrax, and a whole host of other diseases that have long since been eradicated in the West, for which there are really no ample vaccines. And those are the kind of things that he could spread with high-altitude vaporization bombs, much more deadly. Of course, much more tricky as well than the atomic factor here.
Okay, so, why would the guy, though, Sean, be, and then we'll get into the possibilities sure. of whether they did or did not detonate some kind of nuclear bomb,
okay.
but why would he be so suicidal as to attempt to launch anything?
Well,
or is the danger that he could sell this to a terrorist and then let them kind of cargo it into the country?
Well, all of that's possible, and at the same time, it's more likely that it's to be used as a bargaining chip, I think, against the United States and possibly even, you know, even against Red China. I mean, he's become, you know, a pain in the rear to everybody in that region of the world. And, you know, his people are starving to death. They've gone through one of the worst droughts in modern history in this latest period of time. And it's, you know, he sent a missile a few months ago, which you know, just barely missed Japan and actually crashed into the Sea of Japan. So a lot of this has to do with saber rattling for attention, for money, for him to get bought off with either food or humanitarian supplies, you know, and at the same time his own massive ego. You know, there was the joke a while back that we could probably solve all our problems if we just made Jenna Jameson the U.S. ambassador to North Korea. And, you know, that might solve a lot of it. But it's, in all seriousness, here's a guy who I think is, you know, he's and here's why I don't think he would attack the United States. He is not only fascinated by the United States, but remember, he views himself as a Hollywood film director. He's actually had, I'm not sure if you remember the case of him actually kidnapping a rather famous South Korean film crew to actually come up there to help him shoot a film. No, this is true. I mean, to shoot a film about a script that he wrote about a North Korean schoolgirl and her various kind of day-to-day troubles with her family and living and what have you. And it's you know, which was a very famous case of him actually wanting to help have them teach him to help direct a film.
Okay, but what does your gut tell you, Sean? Did he or did they not detonate some kind of nuclear device?
My gut tells me no, that it is a, I mean, that's just a first impression. I have not, I'm very tired after the conference this weekend. I've done really given this no thought and no meditation whatsoever. My view of North Korea has always been a little bit more optimistic than most. You have other people saying that they're going to start World War III,
right,
that they're going to, you know, challenge this.
And Dr. Doom believes that they detonated.
Well, and I have always been not in disagreement with that. I believe they have nuclear weapons. I believe that I am not sure if this is a test, but please, you guys call me like at the last minute and kind of put me on the spot here because I'm so beat. And I've spent all weekend out in the desert out at Joshua Tree and just have given this no real meditation at all. My feeling here is, again, let me give you the...
Well, don't let us put words in your mouth.
No. Let me give you my list of prophecies with North Korea here. I have always felt that North and South Korea would eventually reunite and join together. I talked about this before the 2004 Olympics as an example, where North and South Korea actually competed under the same flag in those Olympics, which I felt was a minor fulfillment of that particular prophecy and prediction. I think that as Kim Jong-il gets more and more dangerous, he becomes more of a threat to the Red Chinese and their interests in the region, political and financial, than he becomes to, shooting off something that could possibly hit Seattle or Los Angeles. Remember that, everybody knows there's the mutually assured destruction here, that if he was to try anything like that, we would wipe this guy off the face of the map, probably with the help of the Red Chinese in that aspect, because he's become just as much of a pain to them as he has to everyone else. What you are going to see, and what I hope happens out of this, is you're going to see a much more militant stance being taken by the United States in terms of isolating him. You're finally seeing the Japanese kind of getting up on their hind legs and getting more serious about imposing an embargo on North Korea.
Even Hugo Chavez of Venezuela is not happy about this, and
again,
that's a first.
Even in the communist world, he has become, the thorn in the side of people there. And my long-range predictions had always been that you would see over the short that phase one of these various wars and conflicts would be the United States and the Trilateral Commission, the U.S. and England, fighting these series of kind of useless wars in the Middle East, and that's phase one. And that phase two would actually be that you would see China extend its military and primarily political and economic might over most of Asia, which would then lead to the United States and the Red Chinese going toe-to-toe sometime around between the years 2015 and about 2018.
Well, here's what I see, though, as a problem. I could see North Korea giving dirty radiological material to Al-Qaeda.
Certainly possible, and that would be in line with the predictions that I've made all along about some kind of red mercury device being exploded in Washington, D.C., that takes out about a 6-square-city block of D.C., that had to do with, and these were predictions I made all the way back in 1994, that had to do with, that pointed to this year as being a key focal year for the probability of those events occurring, and that this would result in a movement of the federal capital to Denver, which I've also been saying since 1994. And Denver is the secondary federal capital of the United States. Remember that Washington, D.C. is only 10 square miles, and the majority of when you have the Capitol and the Senate and congressional office buildings and the White House, they're all within about a 6 to 10 block radius of each other there in D.C. And this last year, you've seen $100 million poured into moving the Central Intelligence Agency, large sections of the NSA, the Environmental Protection Agency, the IRS, big chunks of the federal government have already this year, and the appropriations were actually the appropriations were made last November for the federal government to start moving virtually en masse out to Denver, Colorado. So the question is, why is that, and what exactly is on the table for them now, and what is it do they know as far as a threat goes for them to start doing that?
And okay, of course, Sean, we're running out of time. Got to hit this break. Sean, get some rest on us, okay?
Thank you.
All right, take care. Sean David Morton, we plucked him out of nowhere as he was rushing back from his Joshua Tree conference with Richard C. Hoagland. I'll be back in a moment. We've got open lines for you now on Coast to Coast AM. Well, as you know, Friday night, our program originated in the studios of our fine affiliate out of Portland, KEX. It was on Full Moon Fridays. Had a great time up there. Tom Danheiser, producer at night, came with us. And just wonderful, wonderful people in Portland. We had the book signing for Worker in the Light at the Powell's Bookstore. And not only did they sell out once again, as we did in Detroit and St. Louis, but well over 600 people showed up for the signing. And I don't know if you have ever been to Portland and to the Powell Bookstore, but this place is huge, and it's on several levels. And to get to the level we were on, you had to take an elevator to get up to the third floor. There were so many people up there that because of fire regulations, they had to put everyone else on the second floor and then other people who were waiting in line to get in. And it was just remarkable, and I had a great time. And to all of you in the Portland area, some of you who came from hundreds of miles away, thank you. Appreciated talking with you, and it just meant a lot to me to see all of you there. I mean, it tells me a lot about how you feel about Coast to Coast. And then it was off to Joshua Tree in California, where we were driving through California to get to Joshua Tree, coming across hundreds of windmills all over the place down there in Southern California. It was just remarkable watching those things spinning around. But we had the conference with Richard C. Hoagland, who yesterday was speaking about 2012, and he's got some novel ideas about that. And Richard was not kidding when Sean David Morton had mentioned my joke, because Richard, I believe, may still be speaking from last night well into 2012. I mean, he just goes, and he's like the Energizer Bunny, and but he had a great conference. And in that conference, and we'll have him on soon to show you some pictures that he has obtained, he showed the picture of an artifact on the moon, which was absolutely incredible. I mean, I almost fell out of my chair when I saw this. This was taken by one of the Apollo missions, 17, I believe, and it was just unbelievable. You have to see it. Now, back to the quickly, the book tour this week. I will be in Pasadena, California at the Borders Bookstore on South Lake Avenue in Pasadena. That will be this Thursday from 5 to 7 o'clock. So right at 7 o'clock, I've got to skedaddle and get back down here to L.A. for the program. So Thursday, this Thursday, I'll be in Pasadena for the book signing of Worker in the Light on South Lake Avenue at the Borders Bookstore. And then on Saturday, okay, it's off to Seattle. We're going to do the program Friday night out of our affiliate KVI in Seattle. And then Saturday at 6:30 p.m., I'll be at the Third Place Books on Bothell, if you pronounce that right, in Lake Forest Park, Washington, up there in the suburb of Seattle. That'll be 6:30 this Saturday. And welcome to the abbreviated edition of Open Lines here on Coast to Coast. And next hour, we'll get ready for Doug Elwell, because he's got some mysteries to talk about. Let's go to the phones. First-time caller line, welcome. Where are you calling from?
Fort Wayne, Indiana.
Well, welcome to the program. Glad you're on.
It's an honor, sir.
Thank you.
I'd like to speak a little bit about life after death experiences and things.
Sure.
My mother passed about 3 years ago, and we were very close, of course. And when she was on her deathbed, I was in the chair next to her, holding her hand, trying to comfort her as much as possible. And when the time come that she did cross over to the other side, to heaven, in my opinion, you know, my beliefs, she got the most peaceful look on her face, a look I hadn't seen in years, because she died over a period of time with Guillain-Barré. And both of her arms reached straight up in the air like she was reaching
for someone. A dearly departed, you know, one was
like
there.
Like my father, or possibly my oldest brother.
Or all of them.
Passed away. Yeah, exactly. And George, he had a boxer, a dog, named Jake LaMotta. And Jake didn't make it another 2 months, unfortunately.
That happens. I had a black lab that died shortly after the mother, the chocolate lab, died.
Yeah.
And they go over a broken heart, and it's probably what happened to Jake.
That's exactly what I feel.
Well, it's a great story about Mom.
Yeah. Well, I have no doubt about there is some place we're going.
Got that
before
right.
We leave here.
All right. Thanks for the call. Appreciate it. It's a great way to feel, too, isn't it? West of the Rockies, you're on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
How you doing, George?
Wonderful. Thank you.
Oh, yeah. What I'd like to bring up is that fence that they're supposed to build between America and Mexico.
Yes.
Now, they've allocated $1.2 billion for that fence. That comes out to be about $1.5 million per mile. And I was wondering how they're going to award that contract. If they're going to award it in increments or just give it to Hal Burton.
Well, we'll have to find out, won't we?
I think that'd be a good thing to kind of keep an eye on to see how they're going to do that. That's a lot of money for 720 miles.
Yeah, it sure is. And you're absolutely right. I'd like to see how they bid this out, if they bid this out, or if they simply say, no, here's the company that is the only one we think that could build this, and then they just turn them loose.
Right. Now, I do have another story about my mother passing away when this the first gentleman that was on.
Mm-hmm.
Well, my mother passed away in a rest home, and I happened to be there. And just before she passed away, she kind of sat up in the bed and said, "Who are all those people?" And my mother was blind. And then she laid back down, and she passed away.
Isn't that something? It works. I mean, it's there.
Yeah, I guess there had to be a bunch of people there to meet her.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, the whatever is out there, it works. And you can tell just on the glow of the eyes of the person who's ready to pass on. Thanks for the call. Let's go to our wild card line. You're on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hi, this is Tom from New Lyme, Ohio.
Yes, sir.
Sir, first off, thank you for taking my call. And second off is I have a question. Do you think that because of North Korea's, you know, the underground explosion and all that, is part of the reason they have that stuff is because back in the 90s, we gave them a nuclear reactor to appease them back then?
Well, I don't know if it was specifically because of that, but it probably didn't hurt jumpstart them. And, again, I don't know if they detonated or not. There's a report tomorrow morning in the Washington Times that some U.S. officials are beginning to doubt it. If they did, it was a much smaller version. They seem to think that a nuclear explosion should create more seismic activity than the one that they recorded.
Oh, okay, because I just got off work and I didn't hear that.
So we'll find out. But we're going on the basis that maybe they did indeed detonate one. The technology they've been working on for a long, long time, and anything that might have been given to them in terms of knowledge, I think, has helped.
Okay.
All right, thanks. Appreciate you being part of the program. Next up, Wildcard Line, your turn. Hi there.
Hi.
Hi.
Yeah, this is Andrea. I'm in Los Angeles. I wonder if you heard anything about the date, October the 17th.
Why that specific date?
I've been on chat rooms and talked to other people, and something about an opening. They keep talking about an opening, but I'm not sure what that means. An opening.
I think Dr. Turi might have given us that date. I think he talked about the 22nd. He might have talked about the 17th. I'd have to go pull out my old notes.
Well, I wonder if it could be connected with the North Korean, nuclear test, if they had one, something like that, because it's halfway between the time, and so
Yeah, it's pretty close.
Mm-hmm. Pretty close. Want to ask if you knew anything about it.
Okay, yeah, I'll go pull out some of the old notes. Almost time to get Dr. Luis Turi back on the program. Anyway, next up, east of the Rockies, you're on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
George?
Yeah.
My name is Mike, and I'm calling from Boonville, Missouri.
Hey, Mike.
How are you?
Good.
I'm so thankful that you took my call, and I wanted to tell you that you're doing a great job. And there's so many things I'd like to talk to you about, but I guess I can send you an email sometime.
Sure. The best one you have.
All right. Well, this past Thursday on the Eagle FM station, which I listen to Coast to Coast on, that's the station with Sean Hannity and Bill O'Reilly and all of them, at about 5:30 this past Thursday, or 5 o'clock, the guy starts his, I guess, drive home or the drive report, and he starts out with the news around the world. And in this news, he says, well, I got a report that there's a Russian scientist that has been keeping an eye on a comet called Comet 1843. And this comet, had all of a sudden, instead of passing by Earth, it's all of a sudden, in the blink of an eye, changed direction, is now on a path toward Earth, a direct hit to the South Pole. And he says it's supposed to arrive and hit the South Pole at around Halloween of this year. And he said also that there have been reports around the world of fireballs dating back to September 17th. And that was weird because the lady before me mentioned October 17th.
Yeah. Now, what number did he give for this comment?
1843. And there's been fireballs dated right up until, I think, he said October 4th or October 3rd. Tuesday was October 3rd. So he said this would have been October 2nd. He had said this Thursday, this Wednesday. Wednesday was
well,
the 4th.
Well, there is.
He said October 4th. This was the 5th I heard it on. He said October 4th.
Well, there is a comet. It's designated C-1843. It is named as such because it's called the Great Comet of 1843. It broke into multiple fragments in the year 1100, they believe, and it passed extremely close to the sun. And I've got to do some more checking to see what is going to happen to it. It was last observed, I think in April of this year, as a matter of fact.
Right. Well, I found that very strange that I didn't hear nothing about it except for that news report. And I said, well, if I can get into Coast to Coast and talk with you or Richard Hoagland, that between the two of you, or even Art Bell, between the three of you, one of you would know something about it. But I found it really strange that he said something. Comet 1843 changed direction, and it's now on a direct path to Earth, and it's supposed to hit the South Pole somewhere around Halloween of this year.
Huh. Okay, I'm gonna say I don't think that's a true story.
It could be a hoax.
But we'll check into it for you.
Well, I thank you so much, George.
Okay, appreciate it. Generally, we're going to get those, and though there is a comet out there, or there was one called 1843, I don't know where it is now, but we'll check into that, but I'm not so sure that direct hit story is accurate at all. As a matter of fact, I'll go out on a limb and say, I don't think it's going to happen. Next up, let's go to our wild card line. You're on Coast to Coast. It's your turn. Hi there.
Hey, good evening, George and Coast to Coast listeners.
Yes, sir.
Hey, I wanted to mention one statement and one question about Dr. Corso's NAFTA superhighway we were talking about the other night.
Yes.
Never heard him say it could be used as a means of evacuating cities, and it seems that would make it a lot easier.
That's interesting. Corsi, though. Corso, of course, was the late Roswell military officer. But, that's a good point.
Mm-hmm. The other one I wanted to ask you about, or anybody who's maybe in San Diego, I heard a news report that wasn't on the air for very long about how a piece of one of the planes that had crashed into one of the towers, 9/11, was intact and was being either sent down there or put on display down there. And it was supposedly a piece of one of the cabins of one of the planes with one of the windows intact. And the plane, the story was on the air and off the air. Just, you know, I didn't hear anything maybe but for maybe an hour or two, and then they moved right along. And
when did you hear this?
Probably a couple months ago.
Huh, I haven't heard that either. or anybody else who's talked to me about it.
It's probably Kogo, I think I heard it on.
Okay, that's our great affiliate there. We'll check into that.
Thanks, George.
All right, appreciate you being part of the program. Next up, let's go to our first-time caller line. We find you ready to go. Hi there.
Hi, how you doing?
Good, thanks.
I'm just calling in. I was just curious if Al Gore may have had something to do with the 911, seeing how he lost the election and the administration with the Clintons were in right before, and they were sort of unhappy. Maybe they slid one in.
Yeah, my guess, probably not. I don't think so. I don't. Next up, let's go west of the Rockies. You're on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Yeah, hi, George. My name's Chris. I'm calling from Phoenix.
Hey, Chris.
Ron Quinn, last Thursday, mentioned a case where a couple fellas he knew were out in the middle of the desert. They were in their tent, and they heard something raining down on their tent.
Yes.
Turned out to be gravel. And, you know, there were no cliff or anything. It seemed to be coming out of just right out of the sky. And you mentioned that there was another case like that. Well, I had that happen to me, but I knew where it was coming from.
Where?
I was out in the middle of the desert here, north of Phoenix. I was working that night. I was a security guard watching a construction site out in the middle of nowhere. And I was sitting in my, I had a 55 pickup truck, which is, sheet iron and a bucket of bolts holding it together.
Holding what was an engine, right?
Yes, exactly. A motorized buckboard.
Yeah.
And, but anyway, so it was raining down on my truck, and I was wondering, like, who was throwing the gravel? Where is it coming from? But I was also seeing flashes around me on the surface of the desert. I thought maybe some car was driving along, and it was, headlights bouncing around on the rough terrain. Anyway, finally, I stepped outside because I was also hearing a whooshing, and I looked up, and it was a meteor shower coming in low. I could actually hear them. Coming through the air, whooshing above, over my head, they would burn up green. There would be a momentary glow where they had disintegrated into a cloud of dust and gravel, and then it'd come raining down. And it was a wonderful sight. I'd never seen anything like it.
Oh, I bet that would be gorgeous, but if it would hit you, I think they would have killed you.
Well, if it hadn't and it hit close by, it could have been worth a lot of money, too. But,
well, that's true.
Anyway, it was a great experience, and that explained that. And I know the Earth gets pummeled with space debris, dust, rocks, whatever, all the time.
Oh, yes.
And it may very well be that this is where they're coming from. It's just coming out of space.
Could be. Ron Quinn, of course, the author of the book called Little People. Let's go to our East of the Rockies line. You're on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hi, George. This is John from Minot, North Dakota.
Hey, John. Got about a minute and a half or so left.
Okay. I like to talk about these school shootings lately.
Sure.
You know, it seems like the security of our kids is lacking. I mean, we tighten up our borders, we tighten up everything else, and we forget one thing, schools.
You know what? I think we need to go back to, and it's a sorry time, but we need to put metal detectors in every school. And, it's just not the kid who you were concerned about who might bring some kind of weapon in, but also, like the case in the Amish country up there in Pennsylvania, the guy who just busted into that schoolhouse. I'm not sure you can stop that until after the fact.
Yeah. And, a news agency in North Dakota did a story about it, and they actually went in several high schools, and they walked in with a box and walked around, walked in the playground, walked everywhere, wasn't even questioned once. And they actually showed it on TV of the security.
I know, or lack of.
Yeah, I mean, it's ridiculous. I mean, when I went to school, there were people walking around. I had no clue who they were. They had doors open all over the school.
I tell you what we're going to do. We're going to work on a story on the mentality of why this is happening, not necessarily the guns. I am a supporter of guns. We need the Second Amendment, and we need to be able to protect ourselves. That to me, is not even an issue. But the issue is what's happening to the mindset of these people who are doing the things that they are doing. I mean, they're absolutely out of control. They're whacked out. It's very strange times. I'm George Norrie. We'll be back in a moment. Let's sit back, enjoy Coast to Coast as we talk about some of the mysteries of the world.